Chapter 17, Becoming the CEO. If you want a CEO role, you have to prepare for it with a vengeance. Denise Morrison. When I first started working with direct sales professionals, I used to encourage them to see their time as worth $500 per hour. This wasn't because they'd be making $500 for an hour-long party or sales presentation, but because of the mental shift that needed to happen to see themselves as business owners rather than employees in their business. Working a standard 40-hour week at $500 per hour would be a $20,000 work week. Not bad if you can get it. The problem is that you can't. It's almost impossible to work 40 billable hours in a week without working substantially more than 40 hours. Most creatives are lucky if their billable rate is around 20% of their work time, which means if you actually put in 40 hours, your total billable hours would be about 8, or $4,000, a comfortable weekly wage at $500 per billable hour. As an employee, you'd be paid somewhere above minimum wage for all the hours you put into your business. Basically, punch a clock, rack up the hours, collect your pay at the end of the week. But as an owner, as the CEO of your company, it's different. You've got a vested interest in the success or failure of this company, and you've got to work differently. That also means you have to think differently about how you're compensated. As a CEO, you're not just being compensated for your work hours. You're being compensated for your presence, your forward-thinking nature, and the leadership you provide to the company. You're also being compensated for your persona and how you show up in the public eye. You're representing your brand, your company, everywhere, all the time. An employee gets to punch out and go home every night. You don't. Your business is an extension of who you are. Therefore, you need to price yourself differently than an employee. Don't get me wrong. There are still times when you'll be doing the minimum wage work in your business until you can afford to hire the help you need to support you. In those respects, you'll still be charging employee rates. But if you only ever see yourself as worthy of those kinds of rates, you'll have a hard time growing your business to the six-figure mark or beyond, where you can begin to afford to hire full-time help in your business. As an employee, your concern is primarily focused on the short term, right now, of getting to the next paycheck. As a CEO, you have to look at the bigger picture. While you may only be a company of one right now, or you and a few part-time contract helpers, there's still more at stake here than just your weekly take-home pay. A company that's built to last can't just focus on the immediate needs of a single employee, even if the company only has one employee at the moment. Remember, I matter. It's true, we've worked through this entire book putting yourself and your needs first. The I Matter paradigm begins with taking stock in what's important to you and what's going to work best for your unique situation. But if you stay there and never look beyond your own needs, you're staying firmly planted in an employee mindset. A CEO has to think bigger, and the risks and rewards are bigger because of it. When we apply the I Matter paradigm to your company versus you and your clients, it helps provide structure to the vision of your company. I matter. What really matters to your company? You matter. What really matters to your company's internal audience, team, or staff? We matter. How can you and your team work together to build something that makes an impact on the world? Some of these answers will transfer over from your personal I Matter work, but some of it will be different. Creating a vision for the company that is separate from you is part of giving the company a life of its own. It's part of making it a living, breathing entity that doesn't need your hands on it 24/7. It's the first step to becoming a CEO. Your bigger vision. What's the big picture for your life and your role in this company? Do you see yourself working all day every day or slowly pulling away from the day-to-day operations of your business? Do you want someone else to run the show, or are you content to be at the helm? Are you looking to build something you can sell or retire from, or are you planning to work until the day you die? Even Billy Joel got bored with being in a songwriting pigeonhole. In a 2013 interview with New York Times Magazine, Joel said, quote, "I wanted something more abstract. I wanted to write something other than the 3-minute pop tune, even though that's an art form unto itself. Gershwin was incredible. Cole Porter was incredible. Richard Rodgers, great stuff, Hoagie Carmichael and John Lennon, the 3-minute symphony. For me, it was a box. I want to get out of the box. I never liked being put in a box. Very nice box to be in for a while, but then it becomes like a coffin," end quote. Joel, who made his mark as a songwriter, hasn't released an album of pop music in over 20 years. Instead, he's leading masterclasses at colleges and universities around the world, hosting a radio show, and performing when he feels like it. He's pivoted his business model to support what works for him in his life right now. When you look at the bigger picture of your life, where do you want to be? How do you want to live? Not just in terms of your enoughness number, but in terms of the rest of your life. How is your business set up to support that? Your business vision. As Stephen Covey famously said, begin with the end in mind. It's more than likely, though, that you've already begun, and the end wasn't anywhere in sight. That's okay. In fact, that's normal for most creative entrepreneurs. Remember, you most likely fell into the entrepreneur side of things by accident, unless you're a linear. The key now is to shape the business and direct it so that you can attain that bigger vision as you go. As a kid, remember, I wanted to be a rock star. I had mapped out a meticulous plan from high school through college and onto the world stage. None of it materialized because I was too focused on the how of it all. Go to school, check. Get the degree, check. Book some gigs, check. Record an album, check. I did all the things I knew how to do, but I still never became rich or famous because I didn't see the bigger vision of how my work as a performing artist fit in the world. Remember when I said that we spend an inordinate amount of time focused on the how? That's my proof right there. The same thing happened when I fell into coaching. I didn't know why I was doing any of it other than I was good at it and it helped pay the bills. So I focused on how to do the work and how to reach more people. And it burned me out. The how will sustain you for a while, but eventually that fuel runs out. As I worked with more people, however, something shifted. It became clear that clients were coming to me because of the fears, concerns, and struggles they were facing and navigating their own sense of work-life balance. That gave me a bigger picture in which to work. It became a mission of sorts to help people see that they could do the work they loved without having to hustle all the time, without having to sell their soul, without having to give up on having a life in the process. That mission, that why, led to the bigger vision of my company, ARC Entertainment Media, and the platform I've built for creative freedom. ARC is a company focused on helping creative entrepreneurs stop waiting to be picked and start getting their great work into the world now. Creative freedom is one of the vehicles through which we make that happen. With training content, like this book and our annual event, a web series, and regular appearances at conferences, events, and in the media, we're spreading the word that you can own your dreams without selling your soul and showing people how to do exactly that. What's the bigger purpose behind your company? Why does it exist beyond paying your bills? As the CEO, you need to be able to articulate that message to everyone you meet, including your staff, the media, and your customers. If you can't, then don't expect anyone else to do it for you. Getting help. As your company grows, you'll need support. That could be in the form of a part-time babysitter or bookkeeper at first, just so you can stay focused on the work of the business. My first hire was a nanny for my baby. As a mom working from home, I quickly discovered how much of my work time was being usurped by baby distractions. By having an extra set of hands in the house, I was able to be present to my work and still be available when there was something only mom could handle. Hiring a nanny also forced me to work when I was working instead of falling into the social media distraction trap. As a creative who does most of her marketing online, it's pretty easy to fall down a rabbit hole for an hour or two, which means I'm not doing income-producing activities, IPA. That would mean my nanny was costing me money instead of being an investment in my growth. I simply couldn't allow that. When my youngest started school, I had 5 dedicated hours of peace and quiet each day he was in school. So I reallocated those funds from a nanny to a virtual assistant, a VA, who could handle sales reports, scheduling, and other tasks that pulled me from my best work. It was only 10 hours a month to start, but it was something, and it made a huge difference in my productivity. I had to be judicious about the tasks I sent her because using the profit first method meant her pay was coming out of my operating expenses, which only made up 30% of my monthly income. That pushed me to be vigilant about not only what I was delegating, but also how I was making the money to afford her help. An employee doesn't need to think about these things. They just show up, do the work, collect their check, and go home. The CEO needs to see how all these pieces fit together. You need to look at your projected income for the next few months and see what needs to shift to be able to keep the lights on and your team paid. For all you chaotics out there starting to freak out, relax. This doesn't have to be rocket science, and you don't want to jump into hiring a bunch of people all at once anyways. The easiest way to begin to get help is to look at what needs to be done that you hate doing. Even if you're good at it, that doesn't mean it's in your zone of genius. If you can start creating a training manual now that includes the process documents for the stuff you'd like to pass off, then you can start small. Hire someone to handle that task just one time and see if the process document works. If it does, then you can hire someone to keep doing that task. You don't have to hire full-time help, but you should be ready to pay a living wage. If you're building your business on the back of slave labor wages, it will come back to bite you. There are plenty of gig economy platforms like Fiverr and Rev that allow you to get a great deal on the help you need, and you're paying next to nothing for the work being done for you. Admittedly, most tiny businesses need that kind of a leg up. But if you stay there, you're no different than when Oprah asked artists to work for exposure. Karma is a bitch, yo. Other kinds of help. There are other kinds of support you can get as well. Coaches, mentors, and trainers are in abundant supply, and one quick online search will yield millions of results. Be prepared to invest to work one-on-one with someone. Like you, they are building a business and their time is valuable. It's another reason why I ask you to consider your time as worth $500 per hour. That way, when someone else is charging that rate for their services, you begin to understand why. Not ready for the investment of one-on-one help? Group programs, courses, and even small mastermind groups can be a great boost for you. I say small masterminds because larger groups aren't really a mastermind at all. If you look at the original idea popularized by Napoleon Hill, he talked about intimate groups of colleagues who were moving forward on a similar trajectory or common goal. The key to a real mastermind is the level of commitment each member has to the other. In his book, The Law of Success, Hill describes it thus, quote, "If the entire group has met for the purpose of discussing a given subject, ideas concerning that subject will come pouring into the minds of all present. The minds of those participating in the mastermind become as magnets, attracting ideas," end quote. Thomas Edison, Henry Ford, and Harvey Firestone were a cozy group of men who were three of the four vagabonds. They went camping, toured the countryside, and visited each other at their homes. The fourth vagabond was originally John Burroughs, but over the years, the group expanded to as many as six or eight, including presidents Warren Harding and Calvin Coolidge. Edison, Ford, and Firestone were tight, the real core of the group, while other members came and went with the seasons. For this reason, it's almost impossible to scale a true mastermind because people have to have a vested interest in each other and be moving in a common direction or have a common goal that they're actively working together to achieve. Too many members means too many irons in the fire. It becomes common practice in the online world to create a group program or course and call it a mastermind when no such focus actually exists. If members have no solid connection to each other, aren't able to provide meaningful support and help to one another, and don't even know each other, then it's not a real mastermind. It's a group program. Something else to consider. It's easy to slip into becoming a course collector. So when you're deciding on investing in an offering, ask yourself, is this something that will be good for the overall health and well-being of my business? Or is it just something that makes me feel good about my business? If you can't see a clear path to the betterment of your company, say no. If the opportunity is right for you, it'll come back around another time. If not, you haven't missed anything that would really make a difference in the current state of your business. Ultimately, it's up to you as the CEO of your company to see the bigger picture needs of the company, not just your immediate personal needs. A CEO doesn't hamstring the company for the sake of helping out one employee. As you ramp up your business growth, you'll start to see your business with a life of its own. Your assignment. Start clarifying the types of support you need to grow your noble empire. Who will be on your support team? Begin reaching out, or at least building relationships if you're not ready to make a formal ask of help just yet. But remember that it's better to ask before you need help than to wait until you're up to your eyeballs in alligators. Celebrate. Asking for help isn't usually fun for creatives. Do it. Celebrate that you did it, not what the results were.